it wasn't until I got well into writing it that I realised that the amount of time that I covered football or watched football from the war years right the way through for something like 70 years. And that period had fallen into three financial phases. The immediate after-war years of austerity, then the removal of the maximum wage with comparative affluence, followed by the emergence of the TV deal, which took him into, I think, almost an obscene money there. So those Game of Three halves is actually the three financial phases when I was working in football.
And you, I mean, you were well known for what you did at the Birmingham Mail. You were a star reporter at the Mail for a long time. But you hopped over the other side of the fence, didn't you? How difficult was that?
It was quite difficult. I mean, the way it came about was that, and again, it's covered in the book, is that we had our Christmas Mail, our Birmingham Mail Christmas party in January one year, which was typical of us lot. And at that party, which was at the Drake's Drum in Birmingham, where there was a German umpire band,
I was
supposed to be going there to have a real good time. And Leon Hickman, who was then the overall sport there, called me one side. He said, "Den, we got a job for you tomorrow," he said. And I thought, "Well, I'm supposed to be here enjoying myself." He said, "We want you to write an in-depth article called Birmingham City, the Wasted Years," which was the wasted 70s. Mm-hmm. He said, "We want you to criticise them department by department." And I thought, "Well, thank you very much. They'll love me for this." So next day, I go in and I spend all day writing this article, which was really criticising Birmingham right the way through. Because at that time, Villa were flying high and they were sinking. It was during Alf Ramsey's reign. And so I was then off sick a couple of days. I got a really bad flu. When I got back, Leon said, "Dennis, been great. We've had a terrific response to that." He said, "We've had loads of mail." And he said, "Most of it agrees with you, but some don't." He said, "We'd now like you to ring up Keith Coombs, the chairman, and ask him what he thought about it." I said, "Well, thank you very much, Leon. This is going to be very nice." I can remember my stomach lurching. Oh, I've got to ring Keith, who I liked very much, a nice man. So I ring Keith, and he was courteous as ever. And at the end of it, he said, "Dennis, you're always asking me questions. Can I ask you one?" I said, "Keith, anything." He said, "Will you come and work for us?"
That's how it happened.
That's exactly how it happened. I said, what? And he said, "Well, you know, Jeff Greaves, our commercial manager, leaving. I'd like you to take over." I said, "Well, look, I don't know." He said, "Come and see me on Sunday morning at my house." So I said, "Yeah, okay." And that's what happened. I went to see him on the Sunday morning. When I got there, Keith was out and I sat there. And eventually came back and he said, "We've just disposed of Alf Ramsey. We're looking for a new manager. We'd like you to be our commercial manager." And that's how to my surprise, I suppose, because I'm not a commercial animal, quite honestly. But I felt that, you see, Eric Woodward had set a bit of a pattern at Villa Park, and I knew that I could offer something on the PR side. Yeah. I knew that I knew a lot of people in business, and as you very kindly said, in that period, people knew why they don't know who I am from hell now, but they knew at that time because the Birmingham Mail was big.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had that going for me. I loved doing the job. Of course, Jim Smith was then appointed manager. We met up and we agreed we could work each other. So I had 4 great years with Jim. It was difficult trying to raise money for Birmingham City, believe me, particularly as I'm not a salesman. I did things at the club on the PR side for Goodwill and all that stuff, which I'm proud of. I make no claims at all about making high sums of money, but I more than paid for myself. And then eventually I was called to a meeting about the lotteries by the financial director, and 9 o'clock one morning, and I said, "Well, I've got my lottery figures here," and he said, "Dennis, this is not a lottery money, and this is not a lottery meeting. We can't afford you any longer." So my sacking was as brutal and really badly described. As my arrival there was also a bit bizarre.
So when you decided to do a book, The Game of Three Halves, what did you want in it? What was your objective?
Yeah, well, throughout the latter years of my working in football, my family, particularly my two sons, you know, I'd tell stories, "Oh, I was with so-and-so today and this happened." You know, you're the same, aren't you? You've got all these tales. Often, quite often well-known people. "You want to write a book, Dad?" And I said, "Oh, no one wants to write my book." And I had no idea of doing that. And then after I retired from football, I found myself in golf until I was 79. Mm. I had 14 years in golf, which was superb. But then I'm retired. What am I going to do now? And, of course, my two sons say, write the book, Dad. So what I started doing, I thought, well, a publisher won't come along and publish it, but I can do bind it nicely and just have it for the family. Yeah. But when I come to put down, and I was only going to put down stuff that interests me. If it bores me, it's going to bore the reader. So I went, and one thing led to another, and then I got more material, more interesting material and stuff. And I've also got some geriatric rants, you know. I'm a bit of a moaner and a complainant about the modern way of things and all the money and that stuff. And so I realised that I could actually set it against quite a historical background without being too pompous about it. But it does start during the war, and it goes on almost to present day. And then I realised that nobody else could write that book because I'd worked for, in my freelance years, after I'd left Birmingham City, I did a lot of commercial work for Aston Villa. Yeah. So I'd worked for the Birmingham Mail, I'd worked for Birmingham City, I'd worked for Aston Villa, with respect, over that war of 70-year period. Nobody else could put all that stuff down. And I actually finished up. It's a tough thing, self-publishing, because not only have you got to accumulate the material, you've got to write it down, and then comes the difficult bit, you've got to sell it. And Tom, thank you so much for...
But tell me about the... I mean, is it a game... Is it a book for football fans? Is it a book for Blues fans, Villa fans? Who is it aimed at?
I think it's mostly a book for... I think the people who will... Well, I know from the ones that I've sold and had feedback from now... People over 50, remember those years, love it.
Yeah.
Or they tell me they do, and I'm pleased to believe them. And I think it's more for that. The people over 50 remember those years. Yeah. And so the behind-the-scenes stuff interests them very much, like the armed robber. We entertained an armed robber at the ground.
That's
and the parachutes who shouldn't have dropped and stuff. So there is some interesting stuff in there. And also my views of the relationship between Rob Saunders... And Doug Ellis. I've made some pretty strong comments about Ron's way of thing. You know, on one hand, a wonderful leader of men in terms of getting them to do their job, and on the other hand, not a very good man manager in terms of his colleagues on the staff. So I've written at some length about that.
Don't see that is what the other side doesn't see.
Well, yes. One of the guys who'd done a review of it said there's behind-the-scenes things about the way football clubs were run then, which is quite fascinating. So whilst I would say it's more for the over-50s who were Birmingham Mail readers, I think they probably get the most out of it. I think the younger people who want to know what football was like... See, if you talk to somebody under 35, he only knew the Premier League.
Yes.
He doesn't remember
there was a game
when
before.
Everton might have won it, Sheffield Wednesday. I'm talking about the title now.
Yeah.
When Nottingham Forest might have won it and did. When Aston Villa might have won it and did. Yeah. They don't remember those years. All the modern football fan knows is that the Premiership is going to be won by one of four clubs from two cities.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only Manchester and London, other than Blackburn 1 year. But in the last 20 years, only four clubs... From two cities have won the championship.
Yeah.
And personally, I can't see that changing. Now, I find that very sad for the North East, for Yorkshire, for the whole of the Midlands, for Merseyside.
Yeah.
So all those significant areas of football that we knew, and you talked about them in the pub on Saturday night because they'd all played that day, and you got the sports argument with the league position. You can't do that now.
Absolutely.
You can't do that now because they've changed it all. And it was a guy from the Birmingham Mail, if you quite clearly have changed it.
He went to Sky.
So, I'm plugging that on.
He's reviewing this book. What's your biggest rant?
My biggest rant is the way that money has come over in the shape of wealthy foreign people cherry picked our best clubs and have made English football today is only English because it stays in this country. Otherwise, if you watch Sky, forgive me,
on
those things coming in, you'll find that the interviews afterwards, the managers are foreign. The players they're talking about are foreign. their ownership is foreign. So English football has been taken away from the English.
What did I mean? I think does Karen Brady get a mention as well? I think
yes, Karen Brady. I had one. It's. I recounted that story because I saw her repeatedly on The Apprentice, in which she was a part of setting standards for people who want to be successful in business. Mm-hmm. And my only meeting with her was when I was a freelance. I'm going back about 10 years or something now. I can't be precise. When the Birmingham Mail asked me if I'd go along and do an interview with her, I'd never met her, and she was about 24 then, I think, because they'd got a Birmingham City supplement of some kind, and there was to be an article by her, and Colin Tatham would normally have done that article, but he was off sick, so would I go and do it? So I went in and was taken to where she were. It was strange to go back to the ground again, because I used to work in those offices. Yeah. And she lifted her eyes from a desk when I was introduced, and she lifted up her eyes and went back to what she was doing and pointed to a chair and I sat down. And there was a puppy on her desk. And I told her what she wanted, and she was very unwelcoming. And when I got my first article, bear in mind this article was to be by Karen Brady, and so I needed help to write it as well as I could for her name. And the puppy strolled across the desk, come down onto my knee, and started playing on my biro as I was trying to write her answers. She looked up and grinned because she thought that was very funny. And this went on. And it was only because if I'd been representing myself, I would have objected to her attitude. But I was representing the Birmingham Mail, and I was doing a service for them. Yeah. So eventually, to sort of make a point, I picked up the puppy and placed it on the floor. And the puppy wandered towards the door, stooped down and did a little doo-doo on the office floor. She smiled again, picked up her phone and said something, and a guy in a suit and a tie came with a pooper scooper thing and moved it away. Now, that was my only experience of Karen Brady.
Amazing.
She's now, of course, she's now what? She's Baroness Brady of Knightsbridge. She was born in Edmonton and lives near Birmingham, and she's Baroness Brady of Knightsbridge.
The armed robber is a great story as well. That must have. Did you know at the time, or did you find out afterwards?
No, I was called aside in the D Club one lunchtime by the head of the local crime squad. It was a regular. A lot of the police used to come into the D Club at lunchtime, and took me away to a quiet corner of the D Club and said, "I want a favour." And I thought, "Oh, well, sign football, sell some tickets to the police force." Yeah. And he said, "I've spoken to your chairman, and he said what we want to do is okay with him. If it's okay with you." Yeah. I said, "Yeah, okay, fine." And he said, "Well," he said, we've got this supergrass." I said, "What?" he said, "We've got this supergrass." He said, "The only one ever in the Midlands." He said, "We got him in the nick at Stetchford." And he said, "He's singing like a canary most of the time." I'm not making that up, Tom. He said, "He's singing like
James Cagney style."
And he said, "But," he said, "we're having to do little treats for him." He said, "To keep him sweet." And then he comes out and he's given us some useful evidence. He was an armed robber, this guy. He was sawn off shotgun, but he was in the criminal world. So he was giving us useful information about others. And he said, "And he's gone a bit quiet." He said, "And the one thing he wants is to see a match at Birmingham City, because he's a big fan." He was born just behind the bus depot there. He was comes from that area. And he said, "So we'd like him to be, if we could have an executive box at the match on Wednesday night, use if you've got a spare executive box." And he said, "But there's no need for you to worry," he said, "because he'll be cuffed." I was getting the language on. He said that. "He'll be..." "He'll be cuffed," he said, "and we'll bring him an hour and a half before the kick-off." And he said, "If you don't tell anybody, meet us yourself, take us to the box, open it up, let us in and lock us in, and then make sure there's no alcohol in the fridge." He said, "But if you wouldn't mind at half-time, bring us some coffee and sandwich. If you bring them yourself, you knock the door," he said, we'll take it off you and you'll lock us in again. He said, "Don't tell the staff, don't tell the waiter, don't tell anybody what's going on." And he said, when the ground is clear, we'll go off with him, you say. So I said, so he's all right with the chairman? I said, yes. And I thought, well, I suppose...
what are you going
to think? Well, what am I supposed to say? No, I'm not going to... So we said, yeah, OK. So on the night of the match, even before that commissioner, remember the commissioner?
Yeah.
You know, well, with his posh sister. And this car comes in, and I walk across the car park to the far side of the way this car... And the back door opened. A side door, passenger door got out, and a guy got out, and he said, hiya, Den. And he was a bloke from this village. He was a bloke I knew from this village. I knew him. And he opened his coat and he said, you're all right, Dan. He said, we've got our shooters. And he opened his jacket. I'm thinking, what am I doing? So then out of the back of the car, three people came out together. So, because they're all handcuffed, cuffed. They're all cuffed together. And in the centre is the criminal. He was a shortish, broad-shouldered, black hair little guy. So they marched him. I know, do it as he talk. Because the staff couldn't understand at half time why I'm saying, I want to. Well, it's all right, Mr. Shaw, but no, I'll take it. No, but no, you know, if you take it. Yeah, I'm taking this one. So that. And then when the ground was cleared afterwards, I went up and opened the door to let them out. And the little guy, the villain, said, thanks, Den. He said, Frankie Worthington had a great match, didn't he, Den?
Whatever you say. But,
sure. And I think it's the only time I had a conversation with an armed robber. And I led them back to the car. And then the following, a few days later, I got the sack.
Oh, just that.
But it was unconnected with that. So I believe.
How can people get the book, Dennis? How do they go about it? People want to get one. How do they get it?
It's on Amazon UK.
Yeah.
If they go into Amazon UK books, A Game of Three Halves, and click onto it, it's $9.99 available by post from them.
A very young Dennis Shaw on the front.
Yeah, that was when actually it was so. I didn't know what to have as a front cover, and my wife ordered. She said, "Why don't you use the cartoon?"
Yeah.
And she meant another cartoon, but that one was actually drawn when I left. There's the Birmingham Mail building. Look, there's Birmingham City, and I used to love my round of golf. I'm disabled now; can't play now. But so it was like the golf on the Birmingham City shirt, and it just fitted superbly. I think it's
absolutely.
I'm quite pleased. There are a lot of interesting things in there, like covering football behind the Iron Curtain.
Yeah,
for sure. The early European games, which are now, you know, the height of splendour in all these modern stadiums. It wasn't like that then. Covering, so that's the European football. Say covering football in the behind the old Iron Curtain and all the restrictions and Ireland during the time of the Troubles.
Fascinating.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff there.
A lot of memories, Dennis.
Yes, there are.
Might be another book following.
Well, who knows?
Thanks very much.